Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode contains scenes which are not suitable for children and which some listeners may find distressing. This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
You couldn't trust the junkies. I done it once. I gave a junkie heroin for free. She rang up and she was looking for gear and she had no money. She was from Malahide, big posh house, man that had a load of money, real posh girl. And she rang him up one day looking for heroin and she had no money. The man dad fucked her out of the gaff. And apparently she'd owed him money already. I wasn't there. Whatever happened, he'd met her and gave her the drugs. So she had previously owed money. This is how sick he was. They thought it was funny, like. Called me down to the bedroom. I said, yeah, what's up? And he said she's looking for smack. She's looking for free. And I told her she could have it once she gave you the ride. I was like, what? And he's like, yeah. He said, just get him into the car, get the ride off, and you give it a smack. That's a treat for yourself. What do you mean, it's a treat to myself? I don't want to have sex with somebody. I don't want to give them drugs either to have sex with them. So, and he was like, I'm telling you now, go up, give her the money, make sure you have sex with her. And I was like, there's not a chance in me. Like, they were all like kind of egging me on, like, because they all thought like this was, wow, the lips and all, like, oh, she don't need a bra and everything. Just make sure you wear the condom, you'll be fine, you won't catch on off. She doesn't have the virus. This is how sick they were. They thought it was a game.
This is the witness, in his own words. Episode 5, The Break.
Went out to the car and I got into the car and I was like, what am I going to do? And the woman, I got out of the car and I got into the whole car. And I said, you know what they want us to do, don't you? And she says, yeah. She said to me, I've no problem. I'm happy to go if you are. And I said, no, I hope. I'm just not into it. Like, I'm not into it. Like, I said, I need you to promise me you're not going to tell if I give you the heroin. You need to say that we done it, like, that I shagged you, like. And she was like, no, I will, Joey, I promise. I swear to God, I said, you can't. I was nearly sobbing in the car. I was like, please, do not tell him that we didn't have sex. If he asks, you can fucking tell him we done it in every fucking position he wanted. Exaggerate. I don't care what you have to say. So I basically sat there, gave her the heroin. I sat there for about 45 minutes, standing outside the car, having a smoke. And then my phone started ringing, and it was him ringing. Didn't answer a few times because obviously I wanted to make it look like I was with your woman. Went back to the house, went in, and they were like, oh, so I was like, what's the story? Did you do one? And I was like, yeah, it was grand, yeah. And they were all like, go on, the lips and all, and all. The talk was all fucking, talk was brilliant, and all taking the piss then. What were that fake tits like and all this and everything? And I was trying not to get into it, do you mean? I was like, fuck off, leave me alone, do you know what I mean? I don't want to talk about it, like. And then about 3 o'clock in the morning, he came up and dragged me down the stairs and punched the face off me in the kitchen for lying. A woman obviously smoking the heroin I'd given her. As soon as she'd ran out, rang up looking for more, and says, she says, I'll sleep with him this time definitely if you give me that. And she said, what do you mean you'll sleep with him this time if you're definitely giving me the heroin? She was like, he already slept with you today. She said, no, he didn't. He gave it to me for free. And she rattled at me. And I was just trying to do the right thing, like by giving it to her. I'm not making her like be a prostitute or whatever. And like, he bet lumps out of me this for lying to her. And for basically, and it wasn't what the lie, it was for giving the smack away for free. That's how mean he was. Like this girl was in bits dying sick, like, and he wanted me to shag her just to, why would you want me to shag her? Like, you shag her. What's it got to do with me? Like, I just, that's how weird he was, just strange, like.
And what, how long did you know that girl?
And I knew her, she was a regular customer. Because one time she owed a lot of money and he went up to the house and he made the man dad pay. We went up to the house, with a big gate, big huge place up in Malahide. He went up to the door and told the man that she owed a couple of thousand and like he'd blow the hell off and the man that wrote a cheque and all there, then and there.
What age was she?
Oh, she was a lot older. She would have been in her, she would have been in her late 20s. I didn't want to have sex with somebody. It was like forcing someone to have sex like with heroin, like.
Was there many like her then, the customers?
Yeah, there was a lot. We had a lot of social welfare pay. We had a lot of girls that would pay on Mickey Money Day, we call it. That's what Brian would call it, Mickey Money Day. She'd get paid once a month, children's allowance. So what would happen was is, have a lot of the girls, a lot of them from Blanchestown, Finglas, Ballymore, they'd ring up and they'd be like, they'd have enough money to get them through the week. And but if they hadn't, so they'd say, can I have an eight? And I'll pay it when I get my children's allowance. That's when they get the big lump sum once a month. They have three or four kids. They might get €300 or €400. So the eight be 250. And I remember one day, there was this girl from Blanchestown. And we went to get the money off her. If you had kids, you'd have the book for social welfare to get the money, children's allowance book. So he used to take the book as like a bargain until. And what he'd do then is when it was due to be collected, he'd go and pick the girl up. We'd go in the car and he'd bring her to the post office and we'd wait outside. And what happened one day is we ended up at the post office in Blanchestown. I'll never forget it. The centre was built in all this time, but like the Blanchestown shopping centre was built. It was a new post office across from the Leisureplex. And we were parked outside in the car and he handed her the book. She goes into the post office and the next minute she just runs past the car and just runs down the street. And he just starts shouting at me, get her, get on. He jumps out of the car. Two of us are running after her. He's running down the street. And then he just got her by the hair and he fucking punched her up and down Blanchestown with the car park. Like, I mean, she wouldn't let the money go out of her hand. I was just standing there in complete shock. Everyone was like, there was people screaming and roaring. Like, people thought like it was a girlfriend or something. And he had her on the ground and he bet her black and blue. He did. Took the book off her, took the money off her. And it was just like it was normal. Then she rang up then a few days later looking for more heroin and they just keep coming back. They just keep coming back. And that's how sad it was. Like, it was just, these people had kids, like, and that's what addiction is. Like, they were just, like, she rang up 2 or 3 days later. I'm sorry, Brian, I'm sorry. Any chance to sort me out and all? And he'd be like, this is the last time. And
he had so much control over them.
Yeah, and he liked it.
What did he think of his customers?
Oh, he just smacked it. He was always above them. Stand up to them, don't be taking any shit. Like, you know what I mean? That dirty, junky bastard and all.
I think at the time, cocaine was kind of getting more generally used, I suppose. So were there different types of customers from different parts of the city or...?
Yeah, we'd have a lot more of... You'd have a lot more of businessmen. A lot of travellers. A lot of travellers used to buy a lot of coke off us. Well, a lot of businessmen, a lot of the big houses up in Clonay, up in Castleknock. I used to meet them around Blanchestown Shopping Centre. I used to go to a lot of the homes. And there was people that worked in bookies. It was different clientele altogether. But people that have money, like, people used to drive from town to meet me in Ballymun, like, but they'd buy 5 or 6 bags of coke just to get them through the day and walk, like. Back then, it was everyone was at solicitors, barristers, you name it. People that worked in banks, doctors, dentists.
And did Brian treat those people any differently than he?
Oh, yeah, he used to like to talk to them a bit more, but he used to like going up to the big houses with me. in the car, he'd bring his car and all, and he used to like going up to the door like with the short on and everything, and he used to talk money with them, like I have a big house here and I have a jet ski and I have a boat and I have three cars and I have property up in Drogheda, and my mother and father own like a 6-bedroom house and my sister has a 6-bedroom house, etc. He talked different, like giving all that palaver, like.
Why do you think he did that? Like, why do you think he was...
Because that's the world he wanted to be in. That's what he always... That was his world. He always wanted to be up there. He wanted to be, like, high society. All that champagne and big houses. And that's what his aim was for. And that was his goal. He wanted to be seen as a respectable businessman. And that's what he wanted.
Mm. And at the same time, he was, you know, he kind of idolised... like Martin Cowell and John Gilligan and stuff. And
that's, I remember sitting in the house watching that film, the Veronica Guerin, when a woman got shot, like, and he was laughing and all, and he was saying I'll never be as stupid as Gilligan. But he loved all that. He just, on one hand, he wanted both of the best of both worlds. He wanted to be a gangster and he wanted to be a businessman.
And what do you think it was about those kind of big gangsters that attracted him? Like, was it the fame? Was it...
The fear. I think the notoriety, the fear. He wanted people to be afraid of him. And a lot of people were. I was. All of our customers were. And he wanted the fear. He wanted fear. He wanted power. And he wanted money. What happened was the glass in heaven, the cemetery there was a garage, so we're going to hold it up. Brian says, come on, the lips are going, and we drive down to the garage and we keep going to meet this girl in Eddie Rockets. She was going to give us the details of how to get in and get out and all that, and we pulled into Eddie Rockets, and the next minute we get surrounded. Me and Brian are in the car, about 20 men are around us with guns, pointing guns at us. Get the fuck out of the car, get the fuck out of the car, put your hands in the air. They had me pinned on the floor, guns to my head, arm guards, I had handcuffs, I was on the ground handcuffed, a man had his foot in the back of me, neck and everything. Brian was on the ground as well, handcuffed. I was terrified, because I knew it was serious. We'd been arrested before, doing other stuff. But it was just petty stuff, like, and I knew the rules. But when they had guns and all, like, and it was just, I didn't know what was happening. So they took us to Mountjoy Police Station, and put me in the cell. They took me for a question on what we were doing, and about robbing the garage, and I was like, that's what we're talking about. Just kept no comment. And I was underage. I remember at the time, and I was like, you shouldn't even question me. You're an appropriate adult. So yeah, man, the detective at the time was a detective called Strafford, and he's actually dead now. And he called. He said to the guard, "Bring him into my office." And he brought me into the office, and he sat down, and he said, "Do you know Marlo Hoylands?" I said, "No." He said, "Do you know Alan Bradley?" I said, "No." He said, "Do you know Wayne Bradley?" I said, "No." He said, "Do you know Decky Cullen?" I said, "No." "John Daly?" I said, "No." "Brian Kenny?" I said, "No." "Thomas Hengen?" I said, "No." He said, "Are you sure about that?" I said, "Yep." He said, "How sure are you?" I said, 110%. And he opened his drawer. The next minute, he had a board. He looked at a clipboard. He goes up to the clipboard and he says, "Now look up here." And he puts a picture up of Marlo Hoyland and me. And he puts a picture up of Fappus and me, Kenny, me. So every person, he sat there and said, they'd been watching us for months. So what we'd been doing was coming in and out of the gaffs for the parties, and when we were meeting up, they'd been following us and taking pictures of us. So I says, When your man was finished, I says, now you can put me back in my cell. Everyone presumed that because it was such a serious thing, I was going to rat, like. But I knew I wasn't going to rat. I'd have been killed if I'd have rat. But your man, straight away, as soon as he said, I seen the pictures, my face dropped, like, because obviously I was, like, after denying everything. I didn't know any of these people. And then I walk out onto the street, and it's like that scene from The Bronx Tale, when the young fella comes out of the courthouse, the next minute, it's just all clapping and roaring and shouting. I look down the street, and they're all sitting at the car in the car bonnets, fucking cheering me on, saying, go on the lips. You're doing brilliant, son. And then they all took us to the castle for the session. And everyone got pissed and on the bag, everyone sniffing and everything. But to them, that was like my fucking graduation or something into the world. I kind of proved myself, if that made sense. But I didn't do it to be a fucking gangster. I done it out of fear. That's the only reason I wasn't telling. Because I didn't want to die and I didn't want my family to die.
How did you feel when they're celebrating you, you know, they're clapping you on the back for what you've just done?
Well, I wasn't getting a hiding. So that's the way I looked at it. I was always happy when I wasn't getting a hiding. Because what else? I had nothing else. I always tried to appease Brian. And if I could keep him at, I always tried to keep him at a level, like, trying to get a balance with him, which was very hard because he was such a Jekyll and Hyde. And if I'm being brutally honest with you, if I have to stand there and drink, sniff coke and dance with them all night to know that I'm not going to get raped, slapped, and my family aren't going to be hurt, I'd still be doing it now. Because I ain't got a choice. People say, oh, you have a choice. Don't have a choice. People think it's easy just to walk away, or you put yourself in my shoes. It's not that easy. Once you get involved in that, once you do it once they get you, they only need to catch you once. I'm not on about the guards, I'm on about the likes of Kenny and Marlowe and all them. I was afraid of them because of who they were, their reputations, John Daly and all. They were off their rockers, Decky Corden completely barking, like, fucking things, but you should be just sitting there, they start shooting in the air. Like, they're thinking of hilarious and all mad things, like. But they didn't do what Brian was doing to me. And then I don't know, I just kept my mouth shut. And loose lips sink ships, that's what Brian always said. See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. And I thought they were the things that drilled into me, but Brian. Speak when spoken to. And that's how I live my life. Like the night, one of the nights I was at, they were after doing a job, some robbery. I don't know, they got big books, seemed to get 800,000 or something. Big money at the time it was. And they were having the party, and the undercover cops were sitting outside. And Marlo says to Brian, that's your mate Strats out there. He bet he's a big hard on for me. I hope you're not talking to him. And everyone started laughing. But I didn't laugh. I knew it better not to laugh. And then Brian said to Alan, change the song or something, put a song on to change the subject. But I knew, because they laughed, what I was going to get on the way home. And I didn't laugh, because I knew I would have laughed. But either way, after that party, we left, say we left about 5 a.m, that's me doing coke, you know, Jack Daniels popping ears. I think I grabbed a handful of ears and took about fucking 6 of them. Because I knew what I was getting on the way home. And he pulled over and punched the head off me and abused me. Said I was laughing at him, and I wasn't laughing at him. I was never that stupid. He just didn't like, he felt he was disrespected. But I didn't disrespect him. Like, he used to say to me, you're disrespecting me. I haven't done anything. I'm doing what you're telling me to do. Like, and it was just constant, like. He used to make me dress like him and all. He used to go out shopping and he'd buy the clothes and put me in the same clothes as him. So we looked like fucking idiots. It looked weird, like. It was weird, like. Like, I couldn't even have a bath. You wouldn't even let you have a bath. You'd have to use the same water he used. That's how bad it was. Disgusting, like. It's vital, like. It's like, it's fucking, it's just unhuman, some of the stuff, like. Sometimes it was just mad, like, sometimes he could be kind. And that's probably what the hardest part was. Because when he was kind and when he was nice, it was like nothing mattered. I could forget the bad stuff. Sometimes we'd have a laugh. Yeah, sometimes we'd have a laugh, and sometimes we'd play pool in the shed, and he wouldn't abuse you, I wouldn't be hit you. And we'd have a few drinks, and we'd have a bit of crack, and sometimes we'd just go out for a drive or go field, or I don't know, sometimes it'd be just normal things and you forget the bad stuff. You kind of think, ah, yes, he didn't mean that. I can forget, but I mean, I can kind of put that to, he didn't mean that, like, look how good it was today. And he'd remind you of that, like, it was like when he raped me on my birthday. I think I was 18, around that age. 17, 18. Raped me on the sitting room floor. And the next night he wanted me to babysit, and I told him no, I wanted to go home. And I was going to tell him, if he didn't let me go home, he put knives to my throat. He said, look what I done for you last night. He took it the same way, because the state had a big party for you. Everyone was there. All the gangsters were there, cocaine everywhere. And this is how you repay me? Made me feel like I'd done something wrong. And he was the one who took me home and abused me. And because I said I didn't want a babysitter, that's what he said. That's not what it was over, because I felt like it was wrong. And I said, what you done to me last night was wrong. You shouldn't have done that to me. And he didn't like that. And he said, nah. He was like, Tarita, nah, he doesn't want a babysitter. Look how ungrateful he is. Had a big party for him last night. Every gangster in the country was there. That's what he was saying. They wouldn't have been there if it wasn't for me. Look what I do for you. And I know all this stuff making me like, and I was like, nah, this is wrong. I said, what you, I said, I'm going to tell her what you've done to me. But I kind of stood up for myself. And that's why he let me go. Because I kind of knew, I kind of in my head, I was like, that's wrong. Like, for once, I kind of said, no, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want you touching me. I don't want you putting your hands on me. Like, then he let me go, and I went. And I went back to stay in my mouth for a while. And then I thought I was free. As I said, I got to go back to Ballymun. Got to be a teenager for a while. And it was great. Like, for them few months, it was brilliant. Like, I had a great time, to be fair. I had good friends, and I had a job. I didn't do drugs all the time. I hung around the blocks with my mates, and yeah, I was just normal. Like, my sisters were there again, looking after me, and my ma was there, and yeah, I just done normal things. Like, I had friends like my own age, and I never had friends my own age like that, and I hung around the blocks, and I just had played football and went out on the motorbikes. My brother had horses, he let us go out on his horses, and it was just normal stuff, like, just go drinking on the weekends, fucking hanging around all the girls, and yeah, it was grand, everything was grand. Like, he let me go, but he only let me go because I was going to tell Rita what he'd done to me. After St. Michael's estate, when he abused me on my birthday on the sitting room floor. I changed my number and he wasn't contacting me. I hadn't heard anything from him and everything. It was great. And a few people said to me they'd seen him driving around and all. And I kind of, I think my older brother said it to me once or twice, he'd seen him driving up and down Miles Road and that. And like, that was kind of getting me anxious and nervous, because like, a few people had seen him, so I knew he was watching out for me. And I was getting messages, I heard a few messages off certain people that knew us, were saying he's asking for you and all, and blah de blah. My phone rang one night, and it was him, and told me that Marla was going to shoot me, because he thought I rattled on him. Marlo said that he'd heard I'd been going around saying stuff, like ratting on him, telling him about the armed robberies and stuff like that. And he said that he was looking for me and he was going to shoot me. He needed to meet me. He said, you need to see me straight away. And there was a place called Foss on the Jamestown Road in Popentry, and we lived right there on the other side of the park, and he said, I'll be there in 20 minutes, you need to meet me there straight away, and I can sort this out for you. And once I got into the car, he locked the doors, and never went home again. He took me back to Mitchelstown College. Drove in, put me in the shed. Told me that Rita and the kids were going to be there. Told me they missed me, all this fucking story, all this story. Then, once he got me into the house, then it was all a lie. I walked in, and the next minute, this woman walked out, black hair, and I was expecting Rita to come out. And I was like, who the fuck is she? I didn't know who she was, never seen her before. He was like, this is Mandy. And Mandy is Peter Joyce's sister. He was like, she's a stunner, isn't she, and all. She's much better looking than Rita, and she was younger than Rita. And she was like, oh, Joey, lovely to meet you. Oh, he never stops talking about you and all. And all he ever says is, Joey this, Joey that. And I'm just so confused. I was sitting there, and I'm thinking, I'm here because someone's going to kill me, and you said you're going to sort it. And then we went out to the shed. And he was like, I missed you, and I'm sorry for everything I've done to you, and I just want you to come home. And like, Rita's gone now. Rita never wanted you to be here in the first place. He was saying stuff like that to me, saying that Rita wanted me out and all. He was trying to like blame everything on her. He was saying, like, we're in the big time now, I have everything set up, and he says, I'm after buying you a new motorbike, and I have you a new car and everything. And he was, and I was like, yeah, you have to tell me Marlo Hoyland's going to shoot me. He was like, no, I'm after sorting that out. And I was like, how could you sort it out? I have to get him from Ballymun to the house. Like, what did you sort out in 5 minutes? None of it was true. It was all a lie. It wasn't me that had to fall out with him. With Marlo. It wasn't me they were talking about. They were talking about him. But he just said that to me to get me back. And he just brought me upstairs and told me to go to bed and see me in the morning. Took my phone off me. I said, I need to ring my man and tell her where I am. He said, I'll text her for you now. That was it. Took my phone. Never seen my phone again. And that was it. I was back. And I was back to run the business.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.